Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Mr. Big Stuff by Asia, narrated by Winston James and Wesley Chavon.
What would you do for a Klondike bar?
Me?
I'd show it. I can eat it up.
Tracy.
About Juneteenth. Taken from the National Legacy of Juneteenth by the Smithsonian National Museum of African American History and Culture. On Freedom's Eve, or the eve of January 1st, 1863, the first watch night services took place. On that night, enslaved and free African Americans gathered in churches and private homes all across the country, awaiting news that the Emancipation Proclamation had taken effect. At the stroke of midnight, prayers were answered as all enslaved people in Confederate states were declared legally free. Union soldiers, many of whom were black, marched on the plantations across cities in the South, reading small copies of the Emancipation Proclamation, spreading the news of freedom in Confederate states. Only through the 13th Amendment did emancipation end slavery throughout the United States. But not everyone in Confederate territory would immediately be free. Even though the Emancipation Proclamation was made effective in 1863, it could not be implemented in places still under Confederate control. As a result, in the westernmost Confederate state of Texas, enslaved people would not be free until much later. Freedom finally came on June 19, 1865, when some 2,000 Union troops arrived in Galveston Bay, Texas. The Army announced that the more than 250,000 enslaved black people in the state were free by executive decree. This day came to be known as Juneteenth by the newly freed people in Texas.
Chapter 1. Raymond.
It's not you, it's me, I think. Maybe we move too fast and we just need to slow down a bit before we take it to the physical level.
What could she mean when my dick was hard on the physical level right now? With a silent grumble, I wondered why I was destined to be miserable. Because standing there, hard as a rock with no relief to give it, was certainly a miserable existence. Women said they wanted a well-endowed man, romance writers. I'd heard from my big sister, wrote books with guys that pack 10 inches of meat, and the women are in love at first fuck. But when a real one comes along with exactly that, they went screaming and running home to their mammy. My dick still glistened at the tip from her weak attempt at deep-throating him, softened with disappointment as the realization that we would not get no nookie tonight was evident. With a heavy sigh, I nodded down at a pouting Malika, who was kneeled down on the floor in front of me on a soft pillow. I handed her to make her comfortable so she could do all the things she said she'd do with her mouth. Big brown eyes looked up into mine with a plea to not judge her. The jury was still out on whether I could grant her that leniency. Until this moment, she had been excited to pull my dick out of my pants and show her gratitude for being such a gentleman the past 6 months. She made me wait. I had no problem waiting, to be honest. I worked long hours most days of the week, and women, when you were really into them, took time and energy. I was cool taking things slow until I was sure time and energy was the best investment in her, just like she was taking her time to make sure I was the best investment. This was a two-way street, but often women didn't know that. They were holding out, thinking all men were anxious to speed her up. Nah, not me at least. I didn't have the time. But I must have passed some invisible test because Malika wined and dined me tonight. She took me out and promised a good time when dinner was done. When we got back to her place, she immediately lit scented candles around her one-bedroom loft while I took some time to freshen up in her guest bathroom. When I returned to her living room, she was in nothing but a black satin robe, and my muted excitement finally turned on full throttle. The glow from the lights danced on her mocha brown skin and red-painted lips, and my dick hardened with lust. I knew it was only lust, and nothing deeper, because despite all this time Malika took to vet me, I realized I liked her, and that was all. But I wouldn't say no tonight, and I would continue to have fun with her as long as she wanted to, because she was smart, kind, and funny, and according to her, she could handle a man like me. My mouth had salivated at the realization that me and my dick would get action tonight. Finally. But as she hesitated at the sight of me hanging in front of her face, it was a no-go, which I wasn't surprised about because this was how it always went.
They talked all that shit, even when I went through great lengths to warn them about my endowment. With exception to a couple women, most couldn't handle my size. Most didn't even try once they saw me naked. Malika ran her mouth for months about her ability to take dick, how that's all she liked was well-hung men, and that her body was made for it. Yada, yada, yada. I heard it all before. But what made me believe I had a shot was not long ago. I took her to the movies, and before the opening credits were through, she was stroking my wood through my jeans. She went no further, and to be honest, that was some bullshit. Let me start stroking on her titty and not suck it. She would have been frustrated and rambling on Twitter about how niggas ain't shit and can't handle a real woman, even when the kitty was right in their face or something like that. But hey, again, I was cool and let things be. Took her home and waited for the texts where she promised to finish. And they came that whole night and the 2 weeks that followed. But here we were, with her eating all her words and not my dick. It's cool. Give me a moment to calm down and I'll leave.
You're leaving?
I was tempted to look around her bedroom to see if she was speaking to someone else. You wanted me to stay?
Yeah, I still really like you, Ray. Can't we be friends?
I have no idea why any woman who had just been preparing to eat my dick would think I would want to go back to a place where dick wasn't on the menu. Sure, in theory, I could move on because I was impressed. Well, I was, but I wasn't. But not enough to just deal with any old thing being flung my way. Regardless, I wanted to say, hell no, I didn't want to be your friend. When I talked you through an orgasm during phone sex, I wasn't your friend then, so why now? Nah, gotta go before you want to cuddle as friends. But because she looked so hurt when I reached for my keys, I stayed with her a few hours, holding her until she fell asleep. And only because I was so deep into my thoughts about how I had to jerk off one more night did I stay. When I checked my phone on the way out the door, it was 3 a.m. Just enough time to rub one out, shower, get an hour of sleep, and get back to the office. I convinced myself I wasn't pressed for so long. I believed it. But truth was, I wanted a woman for me. Wasn't no way I was created like this with no mate in mind. Someone could handle my dick, and maybe all of me too. Chapter 2. Raymond. 2 weeks later.
I still wasn't able to get Mr. Barry on the line, but his secretary, Ginger, said he would be in touch as soon as he was back in the country. Did you need me to make any other calls, Raymond? I mean, Mr. McCullough?
I inspected Vanessa as she stood in my doorway, dressed in her orange, too fitting for the office dress. I wondered if I would have to find a new assistant so quickly after firing the previous one. I withheld a disappointed sigh, because I knew it as well as I knew myself. This was headed right where the others had. My looks and my kindness were often a magnet for women, especially the ones that worked for me. But my business at McCullough Business Solutions was off limits and never my dating playground. I made a habit of making that clear from the first interview, all the way through the onboarding process, which Vanessa was just about out of. This was not the dick for you, is what I tried to communicate to each assistant I've had. And they all nodded like they understood the program. And yet they thought I was like a lot of men, unable to contain their chase for the cat that would have them giving in despite all they built. They really didn't understand how I got this far in life. Discipline. Even though I knew it would go this way with them, I'd give them a chance to prove me wrong. However, the moment they lost their mind and revealed they didn't understand the spoken and unspoken rule that I was off limits, I'd defy their asses, and I would be stuck like Chuck, trying to do what was a three-person show by myself. I told you before to always address me as Mr. McCullough, Miss Jones.
I know, and I'm sorry.
The exaggerated pout on her glossy nude lips said she was anything but sorry. If I wasn't wise enough to keep my rules in place, the brown sugar beauty with her long, relaxed hair pulled up in a bun might get it, or get what she could handle. But I was definitely wise enough. I also knew that I had to fire her, not because of me, but because of her. Vanessa's next words proved my suspicion was right.
It's just that working with you the past few months, I feel like we've gotten close enough for me to call you by your name.
I watched as she sauntered into my office, and as she turned to close the door, I looked out of my window, rolled my eyes, and released my sigh this time. None of these women were creative. It always came down to this moment where they were switching their asses into my office, hoping to get to their knees. Why not somewhere else in the office, I wondered. But I digress. I turned back just in time to see Vanessa lean her round hip against the side of my desk. The scent of heavy perfume tickled my nose, and she gave me a triumphant look. I'm assuming because I let her get this far without complaint. Little did she know, I was trying not to choke on whatever she must have just sprayed before coming in here. When she packed her box to leave, Vanessa would have about 15 bottles of perfume she accumulated with her things to take with her. Between that and her makeup, she'd have 2 boxes. However, perfume was the thing that stood out the most because she had them out on her file cabinet like it was a vanity instead of a storage space for records. Every morning, the aroma of whatever perfume she chose for the day filled the office until it reached me seated at my desk, and I coughed on it. My mom would say only someone who stank would need that much perfume, but I would never find out because Vanessa and her things would be leaving soon. Before you say another word, let me stop you. She looked so excited, I almost felt bad for her. Almost. I let out another sigh. When I hired you, it was for your credentials and nothing else. And since that time, I've seen your potential. I nearly shook my head as she smiled with the belief that praise was falling from my lips. To be a problem, and I was right. I need you to pack up and leave.
But Mr. McCullough.
Oh, I'm Mr. McCullough now, but wasn't when you came in here 5 minutes ago. Miss Jones, we can't go backwards. It's clear that you don't understand my boundaries as a man, but more importantly, as your boss. You have to go now. I turned away from the sight of enlightenment reaching her face. The moment she realized she lost at her own game, I heard the loud stomps of her feet leaving my office and turned back to my laptop, where I was struggling with an event plan to present to sponsors. I wanted, no, needed, Mr. Khalil Berry to become the largest sponsor, because what I planned to achieve required a little more oomph, aka money, than before. Miss Jones was, albeit unsuccessfully, helping me get a conversation with the man. How was I going to get this shit done now? As Mr. Black of Pittsburgh, I was responsible for organizing a Juneteenth event to celebrate the time when enslaved black people in Texas were finally notified they were free and the physical freedom from bondage my people have experienced since then. Many events took place in Pittsburgh to celebrate Juneteenth and had since I was a kid. Adding to the fray in a meaningful way took work, and that meant me giving it everything I had while managing an already busy business. To be honest, I would kid myself into believing I love putting it together when all it did was stress me. That was until the day of the event and seeing my community come out and have a good time together. That was when I felt great about it all. But until then, I wanted to pull tufts of hair out my scalp over the amount of work required in making it all happen without a visible kink. It was all worth it, however. The organization I lead at a chapter level for nearly 3 years was embedded in my soul. I was made for the Mr. Black organization, and when I was elected at a city level to run the Pittsburgh chapter, I felt like it might have been my greatest accomplishment, next to starting my business. Mr. Black was established in 1965 as a secret organization at the height of the civil rights movement, to be a light of hope in black communities across the nation. In 1973, the organization went public, and Pittsburgh formed its chapter in 1985 in hopes to deal with an emerging drug problem that was leaving families broken and young men displaced from being who they were meant to be in their homes and communities. If a man couldn't lead with integrity first, he couldn't guide his family. Therefore, the family structure would fall. That was the belief of Rodney Davis, the first president of the Pittsburgh chapter. My involvement in the black communities in and surrounding Pittsburgh is what captured the attention of Michael Jones, the previous president. I've been a part of the organization already, was content to pay my dues, get involved in my free time. But when he approached me at a chapter meeting about him putting me up for nominations, something my spirit didn't fight. I'm happy I didn't. It's been a gift to be a black man, making Mr. Black stronger than ever in my city. And the events we put on were about more than socializing. They were about impacting real change you could see and feel. My first year as Mr. Black, I held a black tie gala auction night that the city talked about for over a month and earned me a place in Pittsburgh's top 30 over 30 and a featured article in the Tribune. That event provided outreach centers with funding that spanned a year and also the renovation of an under-resourced school in the city's Homewood section where my office was located. The second year I had a bingo night, something the community hadn't seen on that scale before or since. Families of black women, granddaughters, cousins, aunties, and good friends came in epic numbers to support their Mr. Black family members. The community was invited in as well, and it would be something unforgettable. Winners won vacations, cash, TVs, groceries for a year, and healthcare visits as well. This year I wanted to switch it up and pay homage to the old way of black people gathering and putting on a good time. I was organizing a huge block party in the heart of Homewood, featuring local entertainment, vendors, giveaways, food, culture. Black excellence wrapped in comfort. Something so important needed serious effort. Vanessa had unsuccessfully connected with one of the biggest names in Pittsburgh, Khalil Berry of KIB Enterprises, in my attempt at getting donations from his company. His PR person, Voorhees Mitchell, informed Vanessa that Mr. Berry wanted to hear me pitch, so he knew exactly what would be most beneficial to the community, but so far, his schedule hadn't lined up with mine for a call. Even if I could get the biggest brain in Pittsburgh to donate something from his multi-billion-dollar software company, I still needed a headliner for the music show. I had a couple of local musicians that were just aight, but I needed someone that would have this Juneteenth celebration talked about for years to come. When I left my position as Mr. Black after next year, I wanted it to be said Raymond McCullough had done all he could to bring his chapter forward.
Chapter 3. Tracy. Do you need that man? Do you need that job? Or are you just comfortable and too afraid to find out what life would be like if you shake it up a bit? Let's get into it on Soul Talk. I'm your host, Zola Berry. And twice a month, I talk to you about whatever is going to help your soul flourish. So find a quiet spot to chill out and accept only gentle thoughts during this discussion, because your soul needs it. Soulful instrumental music can be heard playing before Zola's voice returns. I know you all missed the banter between my husband and me, so I asked him to drop in to share his thoughts on self-progression as it pertains to Black people. Say hi, Khalil.
Now, you know I don't need an introduction. Your listeners might love me more than they love you, Zola.
You can't be serious right now, Khalil.
I'm not. You know I have to mess with you.
You have to get on my last nerve. That's what you have to do.
You know it, and you love it. But seriously, hey, y'all, it's Khalil. And I'm only here because the sooner we wrap up this discussion, the sooner I can get my wife alone. So let's talk.
You could hear the dreaminess in Zola's voice when she admitted she wanted to wrap up early that night, too. A tinge of jealousy from listening to the back and forth between the clearly still-in-love couple spread through my gut and settled there until I shook it off and focused on the advice they shared. For over an hour, they both discussed how moving outside of their comfort zone brought them together. According to Zola, if she continued to believe she didn't need love, she would have never given Khalil a chance. He was too smooth and too perfect, she said. But she followed her heart, and as uncomfortable as it was at first trusting him, she ended up with her soulmate.
She gave her brother a hard time, y'all. But I wore her down.
The two of them started laughing, and I smiled at their play, even as I was tempted to end the recording in my app.
But seriously, I know a lot of people out there date aimlessly without purpose. They move through life without purpose, and that's cool and all, when you're still figuring it out. But it's not cool to lead people along when you don't know what you want. Because I understood, at least a little bit. I was able to be patient with my little baby Zola. And in turn, she started to open up and show me the woman I would need as my wife.
The silence that followed had me imagining shared smiles and maybe a long kiss. My throat tightened with emotion over the love I'd never had. Well, there you go. Soul talk. You heard it from my husband. Stop holding back. Make yourself uncomfortable. Try new things and see what life brings you. I knew this podcast had been a sign. It was time for me to branch out and try something new instead of remaining stuck in the same spot. There was something better for me out there, and I needed to find it. 2 months later, he sucked on my earlobe
and my body turned to putty at his mastery. His soft lips traveled down the skin of my neck and chest to capture my hard brown nipple. His teeth bit into my flesh, and I moaned out loud. Zzzz, sputter, choke, silence. I tapped the hard rubber device against my thigh, relaxing against the mattress, and tried manipulating the buttons on Derek to see if that would do the trick. But nope, it had died. My vibrator for the past 6 weeks, named for the last good dick I had, fucking died right when it was getting good. Shit. I looked down to the foot of my bed. On her gray Sherpa blanket was my tabby cat, Fatty, watching me with a judgmental expression. Her green eyes sparkled before they slowly closed with a disinterest. Seeing there was nothing in this escapade for her, she placed her nosy head back on her fluffy white paws. If I felt it would make a difference, I'd remind her she didn't get any dick at all. Not a fake one, a real one, or nothing. But I knew she was unbothered due to being spayed, so it would make no difference. Angry now, I tossed Derek's bitch ass aside and kicked my way out of the now too obstructive Egyptian cotton sheets. Grumpier than a motherfucker and hungry too, I stomped to my bathroom and almost broke my neck when I slipped on the water I spilled when I brushed my teeth earlier. Water I said I would clean up as soon as Derek finished taking care of me. Rolling my eyes, I ignored my near-death experience while gingerly entering my shower and turning on the water. The cold blast of the spray hit my back, making me howl out, but I refused to do something stupid like jump back and slip, break my neck, and really end all my misery. I'd deal with it until it warmed up. This was not my morning. Matter of fact, it hadn't been my month, my year, not my anything. Honestly, there were days that I wondered if I was meant to have a beautiful life, like the lives I'd seen given to others. Even my girlfriends that looked to be on the same path as me, a path of loneliness, have now gone on to be with the loves of their lives. Like recently, my coworker and friend Karina found her man at our workplace of all places, and with the last person I could have imagined. Salik was what I like to call unavailable, or so it seemed at the time. He had gone through so many women at KIB that if you put the pieces and women together, you would know more about him than he knew about himself. Don't get me wrong, the man was fine. Very fine. So fine that I had wished to get a taste myself. But it never happened. He never looked my way whenever we crossed paths, and at some point, he just became another good-looking face that were like a dime a dozen. And good thing I didn't have a good time with him, because Karina, who seemed destined to live the old maid life right along with me, bumped into him one day, and the two of them have been inseparable since. The entire building gawked at the sight of the two of them chummed up in the lobby, kissing and holding hands, as he took the elevator to her floor to drop her off, and then get back on to head to his floor at the top. He was now working with the acquisitions team that reported directly to KIB's CEO, Khalil Berry. Between him receiving his promotion and Karina receiving hers, leaving me behind down below them, I felt like my life was standing still, like it always did. And even though Karina was still the same towards me, her happiness opened up something in me that felt ugly. I was experiencing the green-eyed monster. Jealousy, envy, resentment. And she didn't deserve it, and neither did I. So, I quit my job. I thought quitting would change something for the better, but things went from bad to badder. The savings I had that I thought would hold me until I got something else dried up because either my skills weren't needed or I was overqualified for the jobs I applied to. I had messed up by quitting, and the reminder came every morning I woke with nowhere to go and a shrinking available balance right along with it. Making a decision out of emotion cost me. So last week, I swallowed my pride and applied to a headhunting agency called The Agency. The Agency was a Black-owned and ran headhunting agency that specialized in Black and minority candidates. The hope of the CEO, Amanda Yarbrough,
was to create the type of experience where a candidate and business could form a solid alliance from the start. The agency vetted candidates themselves, a process that took days of background checks and testing, so that when businesses expressed a need, the agency could provide a work source the candidate they needed with confidence they were qualified. I had only been waiting for a month for the perfect opportunity, but that was a long month where my lavish takeout orders turned into lean cuisines and cup of noodles. My impatience finally paid off, however. Yesterday, I got a call to come on temporarily to assist with the data entry, receptionist-type functions, and occasional project work at a business consultant agency. While it wasn't my ideal assignment, it paid. So I put on my excited voice and promised to be there promptly at 9 a.m. But if this morning got any worse, I wouldn't make it there at all.
Chapter 4. Raymond. 9:05 a.m. For the third time, I checked my cell phone, and my temporary hire still hadn't arrived for her first day on the job. Frustration with unprofessionalism and unreliability wasn't even the word. I'd fired Vanessa less than a week ago, needed someone to start right away. The agency assured me that the candidate was eager to start and would be here promptly because of it. Apparently, Tracy wasn't as eager as the agency thought. When I checked my phone again and it was now 9:15, I had made up my mind to call the agency and have them tell Tracy I had no patience with tardiness and she could stay wherever she was. But I heard the chime of my door right as I lifted the phone up off the receiver. Good, I'll tell her myself. Losing out on someone starting right now would be detrimental. Not only was my business booming with new clients due to the many grants and government-sponsored loans flowing, but I had an event to organize and host, and my assistant had written in duties to assist with that. My assistant was vital to making everything go off without a hitch, which is why I worked hard to find someone willing to do the actual work and not try to work me. But I'd figure it out like I always do. Moments later, I heard footsteps coming towards my office, and I looked up to find probably the most naturally beautiful woman I'd seen in a long while. The stern words I was prepared to give her were pulled away from my lips as I took all 5'9" of 5'10" of her. She was statuesque, with a figure that was all woman, curvy in her bottom more than her top, with a top that was luscious enough to cup. Her eyes were seductive without trying, which made me wonder what they'd be like if she were to try. "You're Tracy?" I asked her, even though based on her crisp white button-up blouse tucked into a black pencil skirt and black stilettos and a black tote bag in her hand, I could tell she was here to work. Her thick, dark hair was pulled up in a curly updo, and large gold dangling earrings click-clacked against her flushed brown face as she visibly worked to slow her breathing. Short of breath, she apologized.
"Yes, sir, I'm so very sorry. Everything that could go wrong did go wrong this morning. Please don't hold it against me. I promise I'm eager to work, and it won't happen again."
I saw her lips moving, and even heard the husky words coming from her pretty soft lips. But a part of my brain could only think of how, out of all the women that dangled themselves in front of me when they weren't supposed to, this one I might not have minded. I shook off the feeling, though. Being a pervert was against all the rules I played by. Matter of fact, it was something I advised my startup companies to check at the door. No sexual harassment or harassment of any type should be tolerated. But damn, she was flying sexy. I found myself uttering and trying to play it cool with her, when in truth I was confused as to why a complete stranger had my heart racing like a teenage boy leaning in for his first kiss. "It's all right. Let me show you where you can put your things, and that way you can take a few moments to catch your breath before I go over what you need to know. Is that okay?" Here I was getting ready to move her in, when moments before I was about to send her to the gallows. She gave me a soft, grateful smile that showed off her straight white teeth and followed me to the office across from mine vacated by Vanessa. She looked around the spacious office before turning to me with another easy smile. God, she was gorgeous. "I'm not sure if the agency made you aware of the length of the assignment." She nodded while placing her tote on the edge of her desk, along with her travel mug and car keys.
"They said that for now you would need me for 8 to 10 weeks, but the position could become permanent if you saw fit."
Her eyes held a question, like she hoped she was right about her information. Yes, that's right. They mentioned you are great at running queries in the...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?